Sav, the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin will not stop talking about President Donald Trump. She will not give up. She is obsessed with President Trump. But her obsession is not based on any kind of principled or legitimate disgust of any position or any policy or anything that the president actually says. This obsession is part of a very specific and flawed political strategy. It's one to appeal to social justice warriors on Twitter, the activist class of Seattle, and it's going to backfire bigly. That's what's going to end up happening. So last week, Mayor Jenny Durkin emailed her staff members, city workers, to condemn the mass shootings in El Paso and in Dayton. And she tried to tie the violence there to Donald Trump specifically. Although, when I say the violence there, actually, that's not being fair. That's not me being honest, because she only actually did that with El Paso because she was able to tie El Paso specifically to Donald Trump. She decided to completely ignore, because it didn't fit her narrative, the shooter in Dayton, Ohio, which becomes more and more evident was a supporter of fringe, far to the left activist ideals like those espoused by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, whom he was a fan of, Antifa, which he was a supporter of. Now, of course, I don't blame Elizabeth Warren for the conduct of this monster in Dayton, nor do I blame the president for the conduct of this monster in El Paso, but that's because I'm an honest person. I'm someone who argues in good faith. Jenny Durkin does not. So she decided to tie the rhetoric, quote unquote, of President Trump to the El Paso shooter and completely ignored what happened in Dayton. However, this week, she yet again turned her attention to Donald Trump, specifically his policy on the public charge rule, which we talked about yesterday, which makes it easier for the United States to reject green cards for individuals who already are relying on some sort of public assistance here in the United States, food stamps, for example. And so in this press release that her office put out, because they love putting out press releases, they give her a quote specifically from Jenny Durkin. It says, "In New York Harbor, the Statue of Liberty stands tall and holds a torch that lights the way, and it proclaims, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. This rule contradicts the fundamental values on which the promise of America is built. Every day, it seems we wake up to a new cruel and hateful policy like this one. Too many people have been hurt. We must and will fight the president's anti-immigrant and anti-family agenda, and we will win." That is Jenny Durkin pretending to be outraged. She's not outraged. She's not outraged at all. This is a political strategy because the mayor in Seattle is not seen as especially progressive by the loudmouth base. The professional activists out there, they don't think the mayor is progressive enough. And that makes her bid for re-election, when she decides to do that, a lot more difficult. Now, she is going to most likely go up against Councilmember Teresa Mosqueda, who is considerably more fringe than Jenny Durkin is, and she apparently is considering running for mayor. Durkin needs to win over the loud activists on Twitter, the Seattle Twitter activists. And by continuously attacking Trump, she's able to pretend to share their values because these people loathe the president. And at the same time, she's not really alienating more of the pragmatic progressive Seattleites, the ones that kind of reject the Shama Sawant crazy voices, but also still generally dislike Donald Trump. So she decides to do this, except it's likely going to backfire because it's not authentic. Her position here, her anger here is phony. It's contrived. Because at the same time that she calls out the quote-unquote cruel policies of Donald Trump, what is she doing? She's increasing homeless sweeps that these very activists believe to be just as cruel. So she's engaging in something progressives already find to be cruel. Durkin says the president targets communities of color, right? He's a bigot, he's a racist, he's going after them. She pursues regressive soda taxes that literally target communities of color. Every single time that Jenny Durkin goes after President Trump with a press release, all I think it does is remind progressives who are upset already how phony she is. They say, oh, look at her going after the president, pretending she's a progressive, but her policies aren't progressive. It is a bad policy. Anytime you try to placate lunatics, it's the wrong strategy. Now, I've got the story up right now at KTTH.com. I would appreciate it if you would read it and distribute it. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the story. Please read it. Please post it on your Facebook and your Twitter feed. Let's shine a spotlight on this ridiculous strategy by Mayor Jenny Durkan. RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So venture capitalist Chris Hansen just dropped another $5 million for two parcels of land in the SoTo district of Seattle, and it's all to bring a privately funded arena to the Seattle area, even though it needs mayoral and council support. Support it doesn't right now have. And support it likely won't have, but he's still doing it. Good for Chris Hansen. He is committed to this, and he's spending a lot of money on trying to bring back the Sonics, and he knows that it's not going to happen with the Key Arena deal, so he still wants to, despite all of the pushback coming from this mayor and from this council, he's still moving forward with his commitment to raise the money, buy the land, and build this arena. And what I'm assuming he's doing here is he realizes, you know what, no matter what, we know that the Seattle City Council is going to look a little bit different. You don't know exactly what that looks like yet, but we do know that you've got two retiring people, right? You've got an opening with Rob Johnson stepping down, so that's three. You have at least three completely new people who are going to be on this council, and maybe they're not going to be as crazy as the current one. You know that Ann Davison Sattler, she's running against the incumbent Deborah Juarez. What's the difference? Juarez did not support the arena in SoTo, and Sattler does. So if she's able to get onto this council, and if you don't know about Ann Davison Sattler, you are doing yourself and your community a disservice. You should learn a lot about her, and you should be helping getting her elected. She's a supporter of bringing an arena, a privately funded arena, to SoTo with Chris Hansen. So there's a possibility that things will change. Now, it doesn't matter per se when it comes to the mayor, because the mayor doesn't want to build in SoTo. And she wrote in a letter, and I'm hoping you all can try, again, this whole contrived progressive nature of her campaign and her mayorship, it makes no sense. Quote, as mayor, I am committed to fostering an inclusive and resilient local economy, which requires readily available industrial lands. Fostering an inclusive local economy, that doesn't mean anything, though. That's a buzzword. They just, like, she loves to say about how inclusive she is, and she loves to throw out diversity. She likes to throw that out a lot. Doesn't actually mean anything, but what she really means is she wants to make sure this land is going to be used for industrial purposes, so those types of businesses. It's a remarkably disingenuous position for her to take. She wants to get the credit, just like Mayor Ed Murray before her wanted to get the credit of bringing the Sonics back, and she legitimately believes, I think, that Key Arena is going to bring the Sonics back, not just a new NHL team. It's not. It's not going to happen. And so the only hope we have to bring back the Sonics in any meaningful way is to get that new arena. Chris Hansen can do it. At the same time, real quickly, Sounders had some big news today, which is actually kind of interesting in the sense that there was this undertone to what happened with the Seattle Supersonics. Joe Roth was a very big owner of the ownership group that runs the Sounders. Joe Roth is not a local. He's from California. And apparently he was trying to sell his ownership to what we believe to be a California company that not only wanted to buy that, but wanted to do some working behind the scenes to get majority ownership of the Sounders, which of course means it's possible they could sell the team. And so a group of local rich people, essentially, movers and shakers of industry, they got together and they decided, oh, you know what? We'll buy the ownership stake from Joe Roth. And so today we found out that Russell Wilson and Ciara, Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO, Macklemore, they are a group of people along with, I believe, 11 in total that ended up purchasing Joe Roth's stake. So this is Seattle ownership of the Seattle Sounders. It means they're not going anywhere. It's not going to change anything day to day. But this is kind of interesting in the general sense of what this could have meant to tens of thousands of fans if they were to go the way the situation went with the Sonics.
Or it was a negotiation tactic. hey, there's this group in California.
No,
they're
they were
and they're
actively trying.
Sell the team.
They were actively trying.
Russell Wilson, take out your wallet.
No.
And give us all you got.
I don't think that but how about this? We'll ask Aaron Levine from Q13 Fox. He's going to be on in an hour from now to take us through exactly what happened behind the scenes. Because whether or not you like soccer, it's an interesting story with some very, very clear connections or parallels, I suppose, to what ended up happening with the Sonics. We'll get into that in about an hour. Keep those text messages coming. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link to my new blog. That's an Unbetter Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
All day today, riot police clashed with protesters at Hong Kong's airport. This is part of a mass movement sparked by a controversial measure allowing China to extradite Hong Kong citizens. A lot of Americans are mostly learning about what's going on from social media, which is not especially smart. So to be smart, we're going to get a better understanding of exactly what's going on. We're joined now by Zhijing Zhang, a senior Asia-Pacific analyst with Stratfor, a geopolitical intelligence firm. Zhijing Zhang, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So take us through exactly what sparked the protests that we saw today and a little bit yesterday.
So basically, the situation is that what started with the extradition bill 2 months ago had morphed into something much bigger. So today, for instance, as you mentioned, the protests storming the Hong Kong airport, a key transportation hub in Asia. And they have proven amazingly capable of seizing the airport and causing the disruptions to achieve the success. So, and on the other hand, we also see that over the past few weeks, the Hong Kong police also escalate their crackdown against the protesters. So the situation right now is perhaps no longer decided by the possible political resolutions, but pretty much decided by the security situation on the ground.
So what do the protesters want?
So the protesters laid out 5 key demands, which include the complete withdrawal of the extradition bill, of which the Hong Kong government only pledged to suspend the bill, mm-hmm. but short of fully withdrawal. Additionally, the protesters also laid out a demand to calling for independent inquiry of the police conduct. And they demand for no charge of the protesters being arrested as well. And additionally, they also called for a universal suffrage, a political demand that Hong Kong and Hong Kong government and Beijing will find very hard to meet with.
So let's talk about that extradition bill, since to your point, it's been suspended but not completely taken away. What was so controversial about it from the perspective of someone who lives in Hong Kong?
So the key thing here is that the extradition bill will permit the Hong Kong government to extradite the people under the charge to the mainland. And this spark the Hong Kong public and business community and law community in their deep suspicions about the mainland judicial system.
What's wrong with the mainland judicial system from their perspective?
So here's the thing. So between Hong Kong and mainland, there's always a suspicions about the whether Beijing will respect Hong Kong's political and economic autonomy. And given what happened between Hong Kong and Beijing over the past few years, there's a deep skepticism that Beijing will continue to erode that autonomy. So when it comes to the extradition bill, the key thing here is that the perceived Beijing's encroachment on Hong Kong is now expanding to potentially eroding Hong Kong's judicial independence.
Yeah, and the relationship between Hong Kong and China, and really our relationship, the geopolitical scenario between the United States, our allies in both Hong Kong and China, incredibly problematic and very nuanced. So what's the U.S. reaction been like so far? I know that the U.K. foreign minister today condemned what was going on.
So basically, that's an interesting situation. So at one hand, we see that the Congress is calling for some kind of options against potential if Beijing proceed with or Hong Kong government proceed with the extradition bill. So the options could at the table is that one, they could possibly repeal Hong Kong's special trade and tariffs status. And if the U.S. government decide to move forward, then that will put Hong Kong subject to the U.S. tariff as it is imposed on the mainland. And the other thing is that we are increasingly there is the ongoing trade war between China and the United States. And Hong Kong issue can well be a somewhat like a negotiation power or bargaining power for the United States. So right now, we see actually the White House is showing a lot of restraint, staying away from pressuring Beijing on Hong Kong and on the pressuring Beijing on Hong Kong and how it deal with the protesters. But still, it's an bargaining power and option that could do if the trade war completely collapses.
Yeah, and if the trade war scenario wasn't there, let's just take that completely out of the situation here. Generally, the United States would be on the side of Hong Kong in this, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where the complication comes in, and it's a question now just politically of what the United States wants to do in order to get a better foothold in this trade war that we've got going on in China. It's incredibly complex stuff, but to learn more about it and get all of the very specific details, go to Stratfor.com. We've been talking with Zhujing Zhang. She's the senior Asia-Pacific analyst for Stratfor, geopolitical intelligence firm. Zhujing, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Absolutely. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
A man is suing CNN's Don Lemon, claiming that he was attacked at a bar in the Hamptons last summer. Mediaite is reporting the details of the lawsuit. It also includes a link to the actual suit. And it says that Dustin Heiss claims that Lemon attacked him at a dive bar in July of 2018. He says he was working as a bartender at another watering hole at the time and said that Don Lemon had approached him at the bar one night after recognizing him. Or excuse me, he approached Lemon at the bar after recognizing him. He tried to get Mr. Lemon's attention. He offered to buy him a drink, but the CNN host at the time said, no, quote, just trying to have a good time, didn't want to do it. So all's well. Until later in the night, according to the lawsuit, it says Mr. Lemon, who was wearing a pair of short sandals and a t-shirt, put his hand down the front of his own shorts, vigorously rubbed his genitalia, removed his hand, and shoved his index finger and middle fingers in the plaintiff's mustache under the plaintiff's nose, and that said allegedly something that we can't say on the radio because it's bad words. CNN has come out and said this didn't actually happen, that this individual, Dustin Heiss, had previously, quote, displayed a pattern of contempt for CNN on his social media accounts. This claim follows his unsuccessful threats and demands for an exorbitant amount of money from Don Lemon. Don categorically denies these claims, and this matter does not merit any further comment at this time. Now, I'm going to do what CNN would not do if this happened and the allegations occurred against a Fox News host. I'm going to presume innocence. I'm going to look at this suspiciously. I'm going to honestly talk about it and report it. Unfortunately, CNN does not choose to do that, and they wouldn't do that if this was being alleged against Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham or anyone on Fox News. If this was Sean Hannity, oh my gosh, it would be leading every single story, but I'm willing to bet CNN doesn't cover this at all. And if they do choose to cover it, it'll be for 10 seconds. Maybe Don Lemon himself will say something, and he'll just say that this goes without merit because of the personal political positions of this individual as displayed on social media. They would not treat this the same if it was a Fox News personality. And that's the problem with all of this. When you take on certain positions, when you decide to set the rules to go after your political enemies, it shows you how much, or it shows all of us, how much of a hypocrite you guys actually are when it actually comes back and haunts you. Now, I hope Fox News doesn't cover this the way that CNN would cover a Fox News anchor being accused of this. I would prefer fairness. I happen to really, really dislike Don Lemon. He seems like the least intelligent person on CNN. However, I'm not going to use that to drag his name in the mud or presume any kind of guilt before we get any kind of actual response in a meaningful way from his lawyers. And we actually have to see some of this evidence. So beyond talking about it right now, I'm not going to run his name through the mud. That's what they do to the right, and I'm not going to do that to the left.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local, very, very simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on Seattle, and they end up ignoring you and the communities you live in. So we do the opposite. We focus on you, and we ignore Seattle, and we start in Covington, where they're seeing a rise in property crime. We're talking about car break-ins, home break-ins. Just last month, there was that shooting we talked about. The homeowner realized someone was breaking into his car in the driveway. He came out. He ended up shooting the person. That dude's still in the hospital. And so as a result of all the crime that they're starting to see, King 5 is reporting that the Covington police, they are trying to make sure residents take the steps they need to try to mitigate some of these problems. Now, I get the whole, they're calling it the 9 p.m. routine. I get this, but it bothers me that this is what we have to do in order to try to cut down on the crime. Here's Covington Police Chief Andrew McCurdy.
Now we're starting kind of a campaign to get members in our community to, you know, set a timer or some other reminder to every evening before they go to bed to you know, check their cars, make sure there's no valuables in there, and then also to go through their home and make sure that everything's locked up and stowed away, just to not give criminals an opportunity to steal things that are easily preventable.
So, yes, that's smart to do. I don't want to have to live in a city, in a neighborhood, where I have to do that on a regular basis. I should be able to leave something of relative value in my car and not worry that someone's going to break in. We can do this, and again, you should. But I can't imagine there's anyone right now in Covington who's okay with just that. And I'm not suggesting that that's just what the Covington... I'm assuming Covington police are doing their job, they're doing their due diligence, they're doing whatever they can with the resources they're given to go after these criminals. But the fact of the matter is, if we had a prosecutor in King County who actually did his job, something tells me this would be a little bit different. Something tells me if we had a prosecutor in Dan Satterberg who actively went after these creeps, they would start to get the message that they're going to do jail time when they try to steal your car or break into your garage or break into your home. That if they knew in King County they would be charged, that they would be treated like a criminal, there would be a disincentive. Unfortunately, in King County, you can pretty much get away with anything. You can pretty much get away with being a repeat offender over and over and over again and then over again some more without actual fear that you're going to see any significant jail time because they do not charge you. The cops will arrest you. The cops will arrest you. And then the King County Prosecutor's Office will do nothing. We see this happening over and over and over again. And bad guys realize that. And bad guys, because it's in their, here's the clue, it's in their name. They're bad. They're bad people. They will take advantage of that. And they will feel empowered to continue with this kind of conduct over and over and over again, while you now have to be inconvenienced every single day at 9 p.m. Go out, just double check, make sure there's nothing in the car for someone to steal. That's not a good place to be. And we're seeing this kind of crime spreading. There's a case in Tukwila that's so heartbreaking. It's impacting specifically a woman named Nancy McDonald Rogers. So she goes to visit the Riverton Crest Cemetery in Tukwila every single week. She's doing it to pay respect to her deceased family members. Her mom, her dad, her aunt, her uncle, all buried there. And she goes there every single week to pay her respects, except this last weekend when she went, she noticed that someone had stolen the brass nameplates on the graves. She told Cairo 7 TV.
I started placing the flowers when I looked, and I thought, well, where's my aunt and uncle? Their nameplates are gone. It's not for cleaning. They've never done this before for cleaning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, including my aunt and uncle.
10 in total stolen from neighboring graves. And she said they were all there last week, so this must have happened recently.
Made me angry, upset, went home, cried. And then I thought, well, it's not like they took their ashes. I'm thinking it's brass, and I'm thinking salvage, and I'm thinking someone pilfered it, stole it, whatever, sold it for scrap. It's just really sad that we're at this state where people are just pilfering from gravesites.
It is sad that we're at that state. We have lost our way. This kind of petty theft, going after the brass nameplate, really? That's what we've done? Do you think this would happen as often as it seems to happen, whether we're talking about stealing the brass nameplates or going into cars or going into... Do you think this would legitimately happen in a county where we stood for the rule of law instead of running away from it and treating everybody who's a victim or treating everybody who is a bad guy as if they're the victims of some sort of societal ill that they've been essentially forced into committing these acts of criminality that somehow they're the victim? And, oh, man, we don't want to put them in the police custody because then they get into that pipeline and then they're never going to be able to get out. Once you go after these bad guys, they will never, ever get out of that position and they'll just recommit and recommit and recommit, I suppose. But right now, your plan, the social justice plan, isn't working. The whole idea of going light on crime with this position of let's push them into the right path. Let's do restorative justice. Let's give them a big old hug. That's not actually working. If it was, I wouldn't have such an easy time every single day finding stories like this. You think it's hard to find these stories? You think we search for these stories? They're literally every single day all across this region. Petty crime happening. And I don't hear any sense of urgency coming from the people who you should hear that sense of urgency from. I hear cops who are desperate for the King County prosecutor to do his job and actually prosecute these people. How many times on this show have we heard from guests, whether it's the commander in Black Diamond or Chief Carmen Best in the city we don't talk about during the segment, talking about the need to actually prosecute? How many more alarms do we need to raise on this show? How many alarms do we need to sound on this show before King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg does his job? Now, unfortunately, he's not going to do his job, so now that's on us. When he's up for re-election, assuming he runs, we got to make sure that we go out there and vote for someone else, recruit someone who actually cares about the community enough to enforce the law instead of pretending that the bad guys are the actual victims. Sorry, you guys are the victims. The guy who has his car broken into in Covington, the woman who has the brass nameplates of her family members stolen in Tugwilla, those are victims. Not the person who broke into the car or the person who stole the brass nameplates. They're not victims. They're bad guys. Let's start treating them like that. And then finally, some good news if you're a scooter lover in Tacoma. Sun Scooter wants to set up their own service there, which would make them the second scooter company in Tacoma, assuming they get it. There are apparently others in the work. Bajit Singh says the lack of parking makes the scooters a viable transportation option. Here he is talking with the Tacoma News Tribune.
It's pretty good to have it in UW Tacoma because, like, parking is getting packed. Like, after 10, you won't find any parking, so you have to park all the way in 19th Street. So walking there is really bad, so these really help.
So this is an alternative to get around. Now, right now in Tacoma, they're in the middle of a test run for these shareable scooters. They're doing it with Lime bikes. And according to the News Tribune, once they near a permanent program, once they're happy with the nuances, I suppose, of the policies of this program, they're going to be working with other scooter vendors. This is good news for the consumer. This is great news for the consumer. This is not what I think some urbanists think it's going to be. This is not going to alleviate car traffic or bus traffic in any meaningful way. But you know what? When you get one or two cars off the road at a time, whether we're talking about Tacoma, I know they're doing it now in Bothell and Redmond. I think Everett has a similar program. Like, the more people who use these instead of getting in a car, getting on a bus, or getting on a bike, the better. You're spreading it around. I like this, but can we just stop with this whole, oh, you know, if you're in, you're late for a meeting, you're walking, it's raining, you're going to get on the, no, you're not, you're going to get on the bus. Do we really believe that women in dresses, for example, are going to be going 30 miles per hour down down a sidewalk in a scooter just so they can get to a meeting on time?
That'd be an extreme sport.
That's not happening. But you know what? If you have to park a little bit further away from your destination because you can't find parking, and you're going to go on a scooter for four blocks instead of walking it or a half a mile, so okay, that's cool. Good for you. Accordingly, Sun Scooter says they charge between 15 to 30 cents a mile to operate. That's nothing. 15 to 30 cents a mile? I wonder if the News Tribune meant minute.
Yeah, has anyone ever driven, rode a scooter a mile?
I'm going to assume that meant they just made an error in there. It has to be a mile. 15 cents a mile? At the most, let's say you go a mile. So they've only made 15 cents on that?
It can't be right.
Yeah, I'm assuming per minute. But that's still also a really good deal. 15 to 30 cents per minute? If you're going to be on the scooter for, let's say, 5 minutes at the most, because, again, you're not going far distances, that's good.
I mean,
basically
you might
a dollar.
Walk, though. Like, be out $3 or not be out $3?
It won't hit $3, but let's say it does. Let's say it's up a hill. Or let's say you're legitimately late and you can get a place. You can walk there, get there in 7 minutes or get there in 2 minutes by spending $2. Whatever it is, you're a little bit late. Go spend the $2. It makes sense to me.
I guess the money would still not, break even on that. Because most people aren't running late to meetings. Really important meetings.
Oh, okay. Most people aren't running late for meetings?
Scooter to get there on time.
How many times, producer Tom, do we have interviews that are running late? All the time.
1 out of 15.
What about yesterday?
1 out of 15.
Yeah, how late was she?
Pretty late.
Now, she got on a scooter, maybe she would have been a little less late.
Important meetings. You can't forget that. I said important meetings.
You know, I don't like you downplaying the importance of this show.
It's what I do.
Sir, you're on thin ice.
Am I on thin ice?
Would be surprised if you're still the producer at the end of this month. That's how thin the ice you're on. Okay?
Bold.
So you consider that. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. In a little over 10 minutes from now, we're going to talk about the latest instance in which a prolific offender in Seattle, just moments, days after getting out of jail for an assault, ends up attacking a woman in Ballard with a pitchfork. Yeah, that is what Seattle now is. So we're going to talk about that in about 10 minutes. But before that, I want to talk about something that Bebe Rexha is claiming. Are you familiar with Bebe?
I'm Biebs? Familiar.
Yeah, so she's an artist, probably best known for this song.
I don't mean to be so uptight, but my heart's been hurt a couple times by a couple guys that didn't treat me right. I ain't gonna lie.
So I actually like her. I think she's incredibly talented. She is kind of known outside of her musical performances on Instagram for posting provocative photos. Nothing crazy. We're not talking about nudity, but like sexy photos. And she claims that a male executive in the industry, presumably on her label, told her that she was getting a little bit too old to post these types of photos and that her brand is a little bit confusing. And so on Instagram, she wrote, "I recently had a male," and she capitalizes male, "a male music executive tell me that I was getting too old and that my brand was confusing because I'm a songwriter and I post sexy pictures on my Instagram, and that's not what female songwriters are supposed to do, especially for my age. I'm 29. I'm fed up with being put in a box. I make my own rules. I'm tired of women getting labeled as hags when they get old and guys get labeled as sexy with age. Anyways, I'm turning 30 on August 30th, and you know what? I'm not running away from it. I'm not going to lie about my age or sing songs that I feel will sell better because they sound younger. I'm going to celebrate my age because you know what? I'm wiser, I'm stronger, and trust me, I'm a much better lover than I was 10 years ago." So it's always interesting to me when anyone in the music industry talks about how they're perceived or talked about when it comes to looks, when part of the industry that she's willingly a part of is about selling an image. And so when you're trying to sell an image, whether that's the sexy younger person or the more cool, laid back, don't really care what I look like, singer, songwriter, whatever it is, that's a conversation that's going to happen. It's all about the image. Bebe Rexha, in part, is who she is because of her brand image. Now, some executive, male or female, finds it to be confusing. Well, they're going to have that conversation with you because we're literally talking about millions of dollars on the line, billions of dollars on the line, depending on, not Bebe Rexha, she's not a billion, but there are some artists, certainly billions are on the line. So I don't know why it's somehow considered a no-go when it comes to branding. When we're talking about an entire industry that's based less and less now about the music and more about what that person looks like. Now, if you don't like that, kudos to you. Do what you can to fight back. But she's clearly pursuing a very, very specific brand about her looks, and someone talked to her about it.
Yeah, she's lying.
You think it's all fake? She just wants to... Because I also thought that... I find it hard to believe that someone said she's too old to be sexy.
Very, very hard to believe.
So I want a little bit... And I do wonder if... So here's my guess. There's a little bit of truth to this. Meaning, maybe someone said, okay, you're about to turn 30. Are you going to do anything a little bit different with your image?
Could be.
And maybe she took that. And maybe this was the intent. I don't know. But it's also... Look, she's now getting a lot more attention. She is a singer who has a message, and it's a good... I don't disagree with her general message of let's stop treating the sexes differently based on their... Like, okay, fine, I totally agree with that. So I do wonder if this is part of the whole, well, this is my brand now too, because she later goes on to say in this... I only read a little bit of the Instagram. It was a long post. Like, I've always been known to push back. Well, that's what you're doing in this Instagram post. Maybe that's part of it. Is this you pushing back?
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and make an assertion. Anyone who is attracted to females is not looking at her and her Instagram and saying, you know what? Stop doing that. Just
I will say this, though.
Anymore.
My assumption is most people who are following her on Instagram are not dudes. They're other women. They're other young girls who maybe like her music. That's my guess. I don't think dudes are following her as much as you think.
Why not?
Well, do you?
No.
Are you a dude?
Yeah, but I'm not on Instagram really much at all.
I'm just saying, I think most people who follow celebrities on Instagram, I think that tends to be more female. And maybe I'm wrong. I just know a lot of people probably don't even know who Bebe Rexha is. Because I'm tired of the fake love. Show me what you made of. Boy, make me believe. And then he gets all country. And it's easy to say. I love that. That's a good song, though. Come on.
It was
that's,
good the
that's
first
a good
hundred
song.
Times.
That's a good song. It's better than
Overplayed
Old Town
it.
Road.
No, Old Town Road.
Lil Nas X. That song sucks. Okay. I'm all about Bebe Rexha. Why don't you step down? Because you know what? 30's not old.
That's
30. You shut your face. You shut your mouth.
Okay, fine. 35's old. Is that fair?
I'm going to strangle you. It's a Jason Rancho.